Hey, good morning. Welcome into In Focus here on this Monday. I'm Brandon Peoples, joined here for this first half of the show by Raleigh County Historical Museum Executive Director Cheryl Collins. Good morning.
Good morning.
And she's also brought Jed Dunham, who's a member of the Raleigh County Historical Society's Board of Directors. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you because we're going to have a very timely topic here. I'm going to talk a little bit about we have coronavirus going on here right now, which is all over the news. It's an epidemic that's started in China and is affecting a lot of folks around the world. And we're going to talk a little bit about something kind of a historical perspective, the 1918 influenza pandemic.
How about it?
So, yeah, and I understand, Jed, you've done a lot of research on this.
I've been very fortunate to have arrived at the right time kind of at K-State during the centennial of the World War and fell right into a fascinating reservoir of knowledge in the the history back then, and certainly the 1918 plays a big role in World War I.
All right. Well, let's kind of dive right into it here. So what have we learned here from that epidemic and how it kind of compares to what we're seeing today?
Well, it's a great question because I've always felt when you see diseases pop up like we have with the coronavirus in China, so much of the fear that comes out is a response to 1918, and it's what we still do not know from 1918 that opens this Pandora's box of rumor and fear and questions. And so the work that we did through the K-State World War I study and our 1918 pandemic team was to go back to 1918 and to find out a little bit more scientifically what happened then, which might give us a better understanding of when a new disease pops up like we have here today. So the timing of this conversation probably couldn't be better.
Yeah. Well, I remember learning a little bit about it in school, I think, but kind of refresh your memory. What did we see?
So to give a little background, my story, I think, is fairly familiar by this point. But I was a student here at K-State in the 90s, and I came back for a reunion in 2014, and I took a photograph of the plaque, which is dedicated to the 48 students who lost their lives in the First World War. And when I went back to my home in New Hampshire, I did some research. There wasn't anything available on these gentlemen, so thus began my odyssey. And when I was able to come up with the 48 individual stories, we realized that 12 of those, a full one quarter, died from this influenza pandemic. And so my understanding of it, I'm not a biologist by any means, so but I am a historian, so I put things on a timeline. And when I put all the K-Staters' deaths on a timeline, we realized that, my God, by September and October, all these deaths happened. So it was like something dramatic had occurred. And so being a student of history, I took the accepted knowledge at the time, which blamed Camp Funston for this outbreak, and I jumped on board with that story and had the great fortune to be presenting that story when in the audience a K-Stater by the name of Dr. Sally Davis was there and came up at the end and said, "You do not know what you're talking about when it comes to science." I said, "I know. Can you help me?" And that began this group that we put together called the K-State Pandemic Team, and we were able to take a historical perspective, but then we added the scientific perspective to it as well. And by doing so, we were able to go back in time to 1918 and look at the pandemic from a much different perspective. And what we found was pretty dramatic. So,
wow. Well, it's interesting. It seems like anytime there's a flu that breaks out here, mm-hmm. even now, with a lot of people have been sick in the Manhattan area this winter. It seems like I've had strep twice this year, which is a little more than I want to have strep throat, but it always seems like people say, "Well, it's something going around here. There's a reason for this," and I know hygiene was maybe a little bit different back in 1918.
Right, and that's one of the things that we were able to do. So, what happened in 1918, 100 years later, still a mystery. And so, what I always try to do is to place events along a timeline. 1 minute today was 1 minute 100 years ago. And so time really starts to organize what happened. And so when I first came out with the K-Stater story and, heard this story that it starts at Camp Funston and goes around the world. And I said, well, okay, that, I can buy into that because I don't know about the science. And so my explanation was that this virus had to mutate or do something dramatic that viruses don't necessarily do. And so this is when Dr. Davis and I really sat down. She gave me a lot of, this is, how influenza works. And so when we were able to look more about the science and said, well, this doesn't stack up against the accepted rumor that it starts in Kansas and travels the world. And so we said, well, what then did happen? And so the first thing that we were able to do was basically separate seasonal flu from pandemic flu. And without getting too complicated right off the bat, but influenza is a disease that happens all the time. We've all got it. You know, you get it by the time you're 5 years old. If it doesn't kill you, you keep on going and whatnot. And in 1918, the World War had disrupted every element of American life and global life. So people had changed, been moving to different places. And so when this disease hit, this seasonal influenza, which was very mild, didn't kill very many people, but the numbers spiked because of this great disruption in society. And so Camp Funston had a massive, you know, 40,000 young men that were there. Great incubator for a respiratory disease to spread. But the key news was nobody really died. You know, so the event that happened in the spring was dramatically different than what happened later in the fall. And so this three waves of influenza was something that we looked at and said, we don't really necessarily buy into that three waves. We think that first wave was a seasonal influenza, a normal flu. But then something later on in the summer and by the fall turned it around and this pandemic occurred. And the pandemic was what struck this age cohort between 25 and 40 and just devastated it, killed people dramatically. And so that's what we were trying to look at. What was the pandemic? What was the seasonal? And where can we separate those? And the clues just started to stack up once we had this different perspective, and it really started to shape this story along the timeline.
Wow. So what? Give us some details. What did you find out here?
Well, so like I said, as I came into it, I knew, you know, I flunked out of science 6 or 7 times along the way, so I was certainly not a biology expert, but I know history. And I was able to put these events on the timeline. So just by the 48 fallen K-Staters, 12 of them died between late September and early October. So I said, well, something dramatic must have happened there. And this shed light on this separation between seasonal flu and pandemic flu. And so as Dr. Davis and Dr. Justin Kastner was the other member of our team, both from the College of Veterinary Medicine, we're armed with more of a scientific understanding. And so we went back in time, you know, in the beauty of the internet to uncork these great medical journals that have been locked away in some library on the coast of Southampton, England, or something like that, that, you know, 10 years ago wouldn't have been available. I was able to access it straight from the, you know, from the computer. And we're able to read these reports, you know, written in 1919, written in 1920, that had vivid accounts of what was happening at the time. But because the science was so limited, you know, we didn't know what a virus was until 1930 and such, they didn't make a lot of sense. And so going back and looking at them from a different perspective opened some doorways. So let me just read this one clue that we were able to come up from, a report that was written by a British doctor from Mumbai, India in 1923. And again, this pandemic, when it hit, this second wave that just devastated everything, it just changed. It changed the whole fabric of life. And so people wanted to know, well, what did happen? And so this gentleman wrote this very detailed report that went into the populations of Mumbai and talked about, well, you know, who got sick and such. And we're trying to separate that seasonal wave from the pandemic wave. And he writes this little thing where he says, the lowest recorded incidence among the health department sweepers, male and female, these are members of the lowest caste and employed in the removal of night soil and refuse. So he's talking about this first wave. And this group that you would think would be devastated by it survived without any real ripple into their population. And then later, in the second wave, he comes back and he writes, this apparent immunity of low caste members during the first wave failed to manifest itself during the second wave. And as will be seen later on, one of the striking features of the second wave was the excessive mortality among those very classes which escaped so lightly during the first wave. And so seeing this showed us that there was something different between the first wave and the second wave. And the nice side of this is kind of getting Kansas off the hook here, because Camp Funston did not start the 1918 influenza pandemic. You know, so Kansas is in the clear, but we still didn't really know what was happening. We knew something was different. So now what else can we do? And that's when the timeline comes into play. And so we start, you know, working down that route.
Fascinating. Well, this is interesting. So,
One of the things that was most different about the pandemic flu as opposed to the regular flu is the type of people who were
right. Well,
dying.
And so that's a great question, Cheryl.
They were young, they were healthy, and they very quickly
exactly. And that's one of the other things too. As I was going back to do the to find research on it, influenza did not pop up in the papers or in the reports all through the spring or summer. So it was like, well, what, you know, if this was so important, why weren't we writing about it? And it turns out, well, what we showed in the spring was a very mild form of influenza. People got sick, but they didn't necessarily die. But in the fall, when this pandemic form of influenza came back, it devastated groups of people, especially this young group between ages of 25 and 40. And it would arrive, and, you know, and within, you know, and these soldiers are camped in these, you know, very tight quarters and such. And within hours, the entire contingent of soldiers would be sick. And then several hours later, the nurses would be scrambling to try to figure this out. And then the men would start to die.
So it was highly contagious, too.
Highly contagious, with, you know, high virulence, you know, had very powerful contagious and high mortality. And that was those were the two things that we were looking for. Now, we said, okay, well, you know, in the spring, a lot of people got sick, but not very many people died. In the fall, this pandemic wave, a lot of people got sick and a lot of people died. And they died dramatically. I mean, these were noticeable groups. I mean, these Red Cross accounts of these nurses would tell their heartbreaking stories. They said, all these young men, there was nothing we could do. And within hours, you know, 10 of them, 13 of them, would, you know, out of 20 would die. And so those were the pandemic stories. And as they started to get written at the time, they were saying, you know, this is reminiscent of the Black Plague or, you know, the Black Death from the 13th century. And so these stories then start to capture our attention. And we're really starting to find out, well, where does this pandemic strike? Where does it begin? And then organize our timeline and kind of put the source point back. And that's kind of the clue started to fall into place after that. So it was, pulling the string on a long journey down the rabbit hole. It just kept getting deeper and deeper and more fascinating as we went down.
Wow. Well, let's take a quick time out. We'll come back, sure, and we'll continue our conversation here on In Focus. You're listening to News Radio KMAN.